Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed a dream season.
A baseball team that's going to bring back a College World Series title. Come on, stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Still got to get to Clay's article coming up about the impact that Barry Odom's defense is going to bring. If you look at the history of Arkansas football, more recent history than anything, it comes down to good defense, particularly sacks. Hopefully Barry Odom get some of those going. But it is a recruiting Thursday, and it's presented by Breen RV. Breen RV is giving away $25,000. That's right, 25 grand. Giving $1,000 to the first 25 sold customers from February 10th through February 29th. Come see the area's best selection of motorhomes, fifth wheels, and travel trailers, and get RV show pricing. Plus, free maintenance for life. You heard me right. Free maintenance for life. They need your trade, and they're going to pay top dollar for it. They can sell it on consignment, too. The best campers and free maintenance for life, plus your share of 25 grand, only at 5603 Alma Highway, Van Buren. That's Breen RV, where your adventures begin. Clay, before we get to your story, let's go to the phone lines. 877-377-6963. Danny's in Russellville. Danny, you're on the Morning Rush.
Good morning, Ty and Clay. As Houston Nutt would say, we let go of the rope Tuesday night. It was, but you know what? Those things happen to all teams in the course of a year. Now, if we had won overtime against Auburn, overtime against Missouri, how different would we feel about that loss? It wouldn't be as like so much of a gut punch as that was, because we definitely played bad and we give up. And Mason Jones was so frustrated he couldn't do anything. So he has got to calm down and get back to what he was doing. But who knew that we would be such a terrible three-point shooting team, mm-hmm. and such a below-average free-throw shooting team? That's, when you look at it, guys, that's what's killing us, those two things. We're not a good rebounding team. Everybody knows that. We're not expecting it. But the three-point shooting, I expected to be there. Now, Desi Seals, I don't know what he's shooting for the year, but he's missing a lot of open threes. I mean, wide open. And that's why we're losing. We can't hit open threes. And I'm so frustrated with that. And the free throw shooting has lost us three or four games this year, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll just make one more comment, and you guys can comment on that. As far as recruiting, what happened to Ebony Jackson? Did he not commit to Arkansas, the running back?
He, from what I understand, and Clay, you can help me out on this, he has yet to commit. They still are holding a scholarship for him. I think he's dealing with some personal stuff. There was some stuff on social media that people saw. I'm not 100% on that, but that's my understanding, Danny. That's probably, I'll readdress that with Richard coming up just to make sure I'm 100% accurate.
I was wondering if he was having trouble qualifying or something like that, because he never did sign, and they didn't say anything about him. So evidently he's a pretty big time running back, and now that we've lost Chase Hayden, you know, I guess we need all the help we can get. Anyway, guys, I'm going to hang up, and you guys have a good day, and thanks for taking my call.
Danny, appreciate the call, man. If you look at Desi Seals percentage, he's 27 on the year. He's improved to where he initially started. I think he was like 2 for 26 or something crazy to start off, and he's since improved that percentage. But Eric Musselman's teams, Clay, over the years, they've been decent to good three-point shooting teams. I mean, dating back to last season, 35%. They were 25th in the country in 2018. They were 40th in the country in 2017 in Nevada. So he's had some good and pretty lethal three-point shooting teams. This is not one of them.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember that they changed the line. They moved it back. And I think that's, you know, that's affected everybody all across the country. It's not just Arkansas. And, you know, it's, with Isaiah Joe out, that's your best three-point shooter. It may not be percentage-wise, but let's agree that he gets a little more attention than everybody else. I mean, you get him back, your three-point shooting is going to get a little better. And it changes the way teams play Mason Jones from the three-point line. You can hedge with a guy from both sides. You know, I described it, the Tennessee game, that when Mason came in, they played him with 2.5 men. And basically, there's one that, you know, that played one hand or the other, the dominant hand, made him go left. He had a man that would hedge to that side, a guy that would hedge from the other side, and then a guy that would, from the middle, that would leave his man. And you know, you say, well, there's somebody open. Well, you know, he forced up 10 shots in that situation. He's going to have to be a more willing passer when a team commits that much defensive resource to him. And Missouri did the same thing. And, you know, after everybody saw those three games where he went for over 30 and 40 against Auburn, that's going to change the way teams play him. And somebody else has got to impact the game when that's happening. Desi hasn't been consistent of late to do that. He's gotten in foul trouble. Jimmy Witt looked like he had a pretty good second half against Tennessee, but that's the only positive that I saw in that game.
Yeah, he drew a lot of fouls, which was what we were remarking on yesterday. But like you said yesterday, like I said yesterday, like so many of us said yesterday, there just weren't a lot of positives to take out of that game. There just wasn't.
He had a stinker. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was the only one they've had all year, which I guess
give him one stinker. Yeah. And I think maybe that's what Joe Lunardi did. We'll give you one stinker.
Yeah. As long as there isn't a bunch of them, Clay.
Yep. Yeah. If they can right the ship, that game will not, because they've done so much good work and done good work on the road, that game will not be the one that keeps them from getting in. They don't need another one, though.
Mm-hmm. No, you're exactly right. Clay, we talked about in the first segment a little bit. I want to come back to it. In the last 30 years, the best Arkansas football teams, yes, they've had good offenses, but there's a particular aspect on defense they've been pretty rock solid. And you've got some information, you've got some intel, you've done some research that really backs that up.
Yeah, and you get the sack totals, and if you can find one guy that impacts the game, like a Wayne Martin, a Steve Conley, a C.J. McClain, I mean, if you have more than one, well, yeah, that's great, and that's what the 98 team. They had 40 sacks, the 98 team. And then you had Jake Beckett in 2010, 2011. If you can hit the quarterback, you don't have to sack him all the time. Mm-hmm. But in talking with Barry Odom, if you, on 3rd and 7, and you know that's a passing down, 3rd and 7 to 3rd and longer, you're going to have to throw the ball to get that yardage in most situations like that. And if you've hit the quarterback, or you have shown in preparation, you know, when the quarterback's looking at game film and he sees those 3rd and longs and he knows that there's something coming that they can't stop, you got the quarterback a little scared, and that's the word he used, and it changes the game. And, you know, he and I talked about the Super Bowl, and it was just as simple as that, hitting the quarterback. The first three quarters, it looked like the 49ers were hitting Patrick Mahomes. They didn't always get him down, but they moved him, got him off the spot, and made him do something to be able to throw it. And he wasn't very accurate. And everybody commented, is like, that's not Patrick Mahomes. Well, they hit him a little bit. They were not touching Jimmy Garoppolo. In the fourth quarter, that all flipped. The Chiefs began to hit Jimmy G, and Patrick Mahomes was clean, and the game turned as quickly as that on that just that one situation. And he, you know, in talking with Barry Odom, there's a lot of value in that. I was sitting with Bobby Petrino one time, and he says the game of football is so simple. The team that hits the quarterback and the team that keeps his quarterback from getting hit is the team that's going to win. And he says, it's every time. So get a pass rusher. Get two pass rushers. And how do you do that? You recruit speed. And Missouri did that, and they recruited lots of defensive ends. And if you look at the Arkansas signing class this year, 24 players, 15 are on the defensive side. And there were a bunch of them defensive ends. And Barry says you find those 240-pound guys with speed. You know, Akil Byers is one of those that came from Fayetteville that was able to impact games at Missouri. And he says, you know, maybe they add 40 pounds, and they're 280, 285, and you can slide them inside, and you still got speed at that position. But you have dynamic pass rushers on the outside. And, you know, it's what Arkansas did with some of their in-state signees this year from Bryant, from Jonesboro, that they believe are dynamic pass rushers. And they, you know, it's – you can't sign enough defensive ends, was his point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you think about Blaine Toll, Cantrell Wallace, Deshaud Stewart, the guys you're referring to.
Yeah, those are the guys I'm talking about, mm-hmm. Yep.
Those are the speed aspect is something Arkansas needs.
Length and speed,
and
yep.
Clay, I think it's similar to a big center down low who's really good at blocking shots. Even, and you're talking about hitting the quarterback, even if you don't sack the quarterback, your presence being there, you hitting him, and I'm not talking about after the play as a personal foul,
I mean,
but just licking
as he's
him a
releasing
bit.
The ball, yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, just getting him a little bit, and I think you've seen that at times. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, the way he was able to overcome and really turn the Chiefs and help them, almost said it, Clay, help them snag a Super Bowl victory. Even after
they garnered it,
yeah. Don't say that. If you tell me I can't say that, don't say that. The way he was able to overcome those quarters, and you think about also the Houston game, like his just postseason, man, was incredibly impressive. And their offensive line was good, was really good at times, and then it suffered a ton. But that's also something Arkansas. You're talking about the defensive line. This since 2015, I mean 2015 is the last year you've had a good offensive line. And your quarterbacks have gotten pelted every year since.
Yep. I mean, you go back to the one year in the Bielema time where they had Trey Flowers, Darius Filon, Martrell Spate, Tevin Mitchell, all playing on that one side. Rob Smith called it his weak side triangle, and they could get pressure. And that's, you know, they had two shutouts. They had LSU and Ole Miss back-to-back,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, those were kind of breakthrough games. But it's about getting pressure on the quarterback and hitting the quarterback and those sacks. This is a great stat. 47% of the time, if you get a sack, the other team is not going to score. I mean, it's just the odds just go up.
Wow.
In a huge way. So, yep. But it's a fun piece to work on and to sit down with Barry Odom and go through some of that stuff and then match it up with Arkansas history. I spent a little time yesterday going through the stats and going through the good teams, and every time that you would find that they had a good sack guy, you know, like a Wayne Martin or Steve Conley or C.J. McClain or a Trey Flowers, all at once the ability to win increased immeasurably.
And is it one of those things, Clay, and David, we'll get to your call in just a sec, but Clay, last question before we get to go to David. Is it one of those things where they have enough on this roster to have – that type of impact this year? Is this kind of a wait and see game where he establishes?
Well, I think it's wait and see.
Okay.
I didn't see a guy on that roster that I thought could get a sack.
Yeah.
They didn't get to the quarterback last year, and they've got to cover better. And if you don't have a guy that gets to the quarterback, then you have to cover better. And you know, Arkansas really didn't have either. And that's the, you know, and I left off a guy, Jamal Anderson in 06 was a first round. And he had double-digit sacks. So, yeah, you know, it just makes a difference. You know, 06 was a good team. And you know, it's, you know, Jake Beckett, Jamal Anderson, C.J. McClain, Randy Garner, D.J. Cooper, Melvin Bradley. Some of those guys were all on that 98 team together. And, you know, then you go back to Steve Conley, who had, you know, I think he set the record, 14 sacks in the 95 season. Jolie Dunn bringing the heat. And then in 88 and 89, you had Wayne Martin, who was a great player in the NFL and was a sack guy. So, you know, then you can go back into the 64 team and you look at, you know, having Lloyd Phillips, Jim Williams, Jim Finch, those were sack guys. So their numbers weren't high, but the other team wasn't throwing very much, just different time.
What blows my mind is what Clemson had on their defensive line last year, and Cleland Farrell, Austin Bryant, Dexter Lawrence, and Christian Wilkins, NFL guys immediately, and they were all on the same defensive line. That's one of the reasons they won a national championship a year ago.
Yeah, Ty, I'm on the Football Writers All-American Committee. I think there's 12 of us. Mm-hmm. And each school's SID will give us nominations. Clemson nominated all four of their defensive tackles, all four of them. It's like, well, we can't make all four. But you could sit there and make a case for every one of them.
Yeah.
And when you look at what they could do to a game, you know, by the fourth quarter, their defense was dominating in those tackles. You could not. They were unblocked for much of the game. And if you're a linebacker, you're having a lot of fun playing behind those guys because they're double teaming two of them, and your linebackers are running free, never to be touched.
877-377-6963. David is in South Arkansas. David, you're on the Morning Rush.
Good morning, gentlemen. As a Chiefs season ticket holder, I do appreciate y'all using the Chiefs and as an example about pass rush. I'm a defensive fanatic, and I personally don't care if the score is 2-0 as long as my team has two. But you're spot on with the pass rush. Even if you don't hit the quarterback, give him the happy feet. I've watched the Chiefs play Peyton Manning, even when he gets happy feet, throw him off his timing. So you don't have to hit the guy. But when the Chiefs got Jones back, when the Chiefs got Clark, got that pass rush going, that's when you could tell, like, you know, Clay just pointed out, the game turned. I love it, but give me a pass rush, hit the quarterback, knock him down. I don't care, but defense. Like I said, it could be 2-0 for all I care. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, David. And I think that's one of the biggest differences from the Kansas City Chiefs last year to this year is the defense. Not only the pass rush, but the defense overall. You think about how they couldn't stop Tom Brady in Foxborough last year. I know that's it's a very difficult task to do, and me just stating it like it's easy is probably not the most accurate way of describing it, but the Chiefs defense. And we always give credit to the offense and the high-flying Patrick Mahomes, Legion of Zoom, which they deserve their just due. But the defense and Steve Spagnuolo vastly improved this year, and it's probably one of the biggest reasons, if not the biggest reasons, they walked home with the Super Bowl and brought it back to KC.
Yeah, now you have to point out that mid-season they weren't very good on defense.
Nope.
to that point, and they added the Honey Badger and Clark to rush the passer and, you know, help their pass defense, Honey Badger and Tyrone Matthew, and that changed their defense, and they became a different team from that point on. And it wasn't always about having to outscore the other team once they got those two guys to kind of give them a full complement of defense, but, you know, help their pass rush and then help their pass defense. So, yeah, and I mean, I think that's sometimes, it's about personnel. You know, you got to have the right guys. You can know defense and you can understand it. I thought Rob Smith got a bad rap here. But when he had good players, I think his defense was pretty good. And somebody says, well, he has to have NFL players. Well, they all do.
Yeah.
If you don't have any NFL players, you're not nearly as good a coach. I heard somebody, I think it was on this show, is like, we need to get a coach that understands how to coach young players because that's what we've got. Well, most of those guys are losers.
The story you always refer to back at the Tulsa World? When Barry Switzer was at Oklahoma and Jimmy Johnson was at Oklahoma State, Switzer would beat him, and you always question, well, I think Switzer's the better coach. Then Jimmy goes down to Miami, does what he does with the U, and you realize, well, it's about the talent you have. Like, yes, there's intricacies in coaching, and you do one thing, game planning, stuff like that. That's a big deal. But at the end of the day, a lot of times it comes down to the Jimmies and the Joes.
Oh, it does, no doubt. And it starts in recruiting. But you have to establish a culture. You've got to build that DNA. And that's the challenge that Barry Odom has. He said, I've got to reteach them how to walk in a room. I've got to reteach them how to to treat their teammates. Got to reteach and coach them on how to go on the field. And then, you know, everything else after that. But he said, we are changing the culture, and we're also teaching them effort. And that has to change in Arkansas. And I think that sometimes you have a good player, but the culture is so bad that they don't flourish. Now, you tell me if McTelvin Agim, when he goes to the, you know, to the Senior Bowl, the East-West, and he shines, he could play, but the culture just, it was so bad that it reduced him to a level where he didn't flourish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a text in here from Brandon in Paris. Clay said a great defense can give a 2-touchdown advantage. Let's hope not only does Kendall Briles get the offense going, but Barry Odom gets the defense as well. If you need a place to watch the Arkansas basketball game on Saturday, Joe's Grill and Cantina is the spot. Half price apps and taps during the game, TVs all around in the restaurant, and again, brisket nachos, Mexican pizza, humongous sampler plate. Joe's Grill and Cantina, all the beer is half price on tap during the game. Watch it at Joe's Grill and Cantina, 3400 South 74th Street, across from Hartson, Fort Smith. Go Hawks. Clay, we're going to talk about coming up how hyped Malik Hornsby is coming. Sam Pittman was on Paul Feinbaum yesterday with Peter Burns. He talked about him. I want to talk some baseball with you coming up. But before we do that, want to keep this conversation going. How many years do you think it's going to take Barry Odom to establish the type of defense he wants to consistently have at Arkansas?
Well, I think it's probably a 2-year process, and you wouldn't expect it to flip so fast next year. I mean, he said that it might be that it takes a while for you to notice a change, but that he'll notice just some of the things that they're doing in the process that tell him that they're going to be there. You're asking a lot of young players, a lot of freshmen that have not played in the SEC to contribute next year. And I don't think that you can do it immediately. I think it will take a little bit of time. But it's, I saw Joe Kynes make an immediate impression when he came in 90. And it was it's a process, and it is, also you have to keep adding pieces to it and let those pieces mature. But I think there's some hidden gems that maybe we didn't notice so much last year. Matteo Soli, who played basically with one hand the whole season.
Yeah, the club.
I had a broken hand and played with a cast, and I think that really deterred his development. I'd be interested to see what Barry thinks of, Soli and Zach Williams and some of the other young defensive linemen.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette set to join us now. Richard, it's a Recruiting Thursday, man. That's why we got you on. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, man, thanks for having me, guys.
So we've gotten a couple questions in here on the Morning Rush, and if you have a question for Richard, be sure to text in 877-377-6963. And a lot of the questions, Richard, have been concerning Ebony Jackson and Xavier Kelly. And I know this is kind of a fluid situation with them both. There's potential scenarios with the coaching staff deciding what they're wanting to do. What's the latest on that, and what direction you think the coaching staff is headed?
Well, I think Coach Pittman was on a show recently, and he was talking about that they're looking for a difference maker on offense. And so they only have one more spot left since they've added the grad transfers. So right now, you're right. I think it's a fluid situation. I think Ebony Jackson is a possibility. I think they're going to wait until later during the spring to see whether or not he's able to join the program. But as far as Xavier, the last time I talked to him, which was over a week ago, he said he hadn't He didn't have a firm date for the decision when he was going to announce anything. So right now it sounds like that they're going to go use that last spot for an offensive guy. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Luke Jones, Sam Pittman, in his signing day press conference mentioned, Richard, that he was not on scholarship. Can you update us with any more information concerning the former Pulaski Academy standout and Notre Dame transfer?
No, not really, because I'll be honest with you, that's kind of news to me. So I think he'll eventually be on scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously still on campus. I saw his dad over the weekend, and everything seemed to be, he seemed to be in good spirits, really enjoying the new staff, enjoying the new strength and conditioning staffs too. So I just tend to think it's only a matter of time until he gets on the scholarship.
We're talking with Richard Davenport this morning on the Morning Rush. Richard, have you seen this Mel Tucker situation, the former Colorado head coach, now Michigan State? He puts out on Twitter saying he's sticking with the Buffaloes and then gets an offer he can't refuse. And I wanted to get your take on this as a recruiting guy that talks with kids all the time about coaches that are saying they're going to be at one place and they end up getting to go another, or they go another route. What's your take on this whole situation that has transpired with Mel Tucker?
Well, I imagine he regrets saying some of the things that he did about staying at Colorado. So that's why sometimes you don't say anything until you're absolutely 100% sure you made a firm decision. And, you know, coaches have to do what they have to do to, you know, for them professionally and for their families. You can't fault him there. It just seems like that, you know, he obviously, from a PR standpoint, really did a poor job of handling it and just, you know, tweeting out how he was going to stay at Colorado. And then and shortly after that, ended up in East Lansing. So, it's unfortunate for the kids, obviously, but, you know, it's an early life lesson that there's disappointments in life and you have to deal with it and manage, manage you through the adversity. You know, I mean, I know it's very disappointing, but mm-hmm. It happens. It's going to continue to happen. There's no way to avoid it. The possibilities are always going to be there.
Got a question earlier for you, Richard, asking about Tyus Martin out of Jacksonville and Marlon Crockett out of Searcy. And it seems that this guy's telling me that it seems like the U of A is ignoring them. Can you give me information on Tyus Martin, the defensive tackle out of Jacksonville, and Searcy's Marlon Crockett?
Well, I mean, it's early in the process. Tyus had a visit set up for Tennessee the same weekend that that Arkansas was having juniors and sophomores on campus February the 1st. So, don't. I mean, it's early, and they definitely know about Marlon Crockett. I'm sure they're gonna go by both schools during the spring. Continue to evaluate them. They're not gonna ignore an in-state talent. I can assure you, Coach Pittman's going to see to that. So they got all the coaches have. You know, it's kind of like Chad Morse's philosophy. Each coach has a part of the state, so you know that allows you to really kind of look for every possibility. You know, as far as a potential prospect, because it's just not one or two guys. You know, divvying up the state, it's all 10. So you have a little bit more attention, individual attention.
Talking recruiting with Richard Davenport on the Morning Rush. You've seen this hashtag from Sam Carter, who's the cornerbacks coach at Arkansas, and he keeps putting out "Why Not Arkansas" on Twitter every week or so. What are your thoughts on that strategy, continuously stressing "Why Not Arkansas"?
I think he's saying why not? I mean, obviously, why not Arkansas? But you're saying that if other schools can do on elite level, why not Arkansas? And you think back, and I made this comparison on Twitter a while back, and some people agreed with me, some people didn't. But if you want to look at the closest thing to Arkansas, as far as just past history, amount of kids that you sign each year, and in-state kids. You look at Clemson. You know, people say, "Well, Clemson's Clemson." Well, Clemson wasn't Clemson until 2011 when they first started their string of 10-win seasons. Before that, they won about 7.7 games a year for the last 40 years. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Arkansas won 7 games. So they sign an average of 6.6 in-state guys. So the rest of their prospects come from out of state. Arkansas signs about 6 kids a year from in-state. So why not Arkansas? Why not? Why can't Arkansas be like Clemson? Because they're very similar as far as their history. Until the last, say, 10 years, obviously Clemson is an elite program now. But before that, they were kind of very similar to Arkansas.
What's wild to me about the Clemson-Arkansas comparison that you're making, Richard, is Arkansas's money, the revenue that they produce, is so much higher than Clemson's, like the athletic department. That's partial help, too, because of the SEC network, and it's only going to get bigger with this supposed ABC-ESPN contract that they're about to scoop out from CBS. The money's there. But for Clemson, correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't know if you know this or not, I think they were like on the fringe of being top 25 revenue generating departments in not only college football, but like college sports in general, which is just wild to me that they're that low comparatively to where they've been at football the last couple of years.
Well, I mean, they split the state with South Carolina. That's the advantage of Arkansas being basically the only show in town in the state. So most of the money goes there where, you know, it's divvied up in South Carolina. So it's not surprising considering that. And also, like you said, being in the SEC and the revenue you get from the conference.
Richard, tell us about Theodore Knox, Trey's little brother. He's a 4-star kid. He's different frame, 5'10", 4'4", 240, more of a quickster. Trey Knox is more of a possession, go-up-and-get-it guy. What could Arkansas be potentially getting in Theodore Knox if he decides to commit and eventually sign later down the road?
You know, I just noticed he got the offer just recently, and I really haven't looked at him that much. But obviously that... The name is going to help Arkansas, so anxious to talk to him and find out more about him.
Good bloodline. That's no question about that. All right, Richard, last question. We'll switch up to basketball before we let you go. Waldron's not too far from where I am. Peyton Brown's been a guy that people have been wondering about. In-state kid can absolutely just fill it up from the three-point line. I've gotten a chance to watch him play. Not the most athletic, but just a dead-eye shooter. What's the latest you're hearing on him and where he's choosing to go to school?
Well, I mean, right now he's just getting a lot of interest from a lot of major colleges, and Arkansas has seen him play. Coach Moser saw him play. I'm going to say about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. So they know they've always been aware of him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to ever, you know, extend an offer or anything like that. But, you know, they obviously have put the effort in going to see him. But I think when you shoot the ball like Pate, you got a shot. And I think schools are intrigued enough by his ability to score that he's probably going to land somewhere that, you know, maybe a higher Division One schools other than, say, UCA. He was signed with UCA and obviously got a release after the coaching situation there. But he can fill it up. There's no doubt about it.
Richard, could he be like a Dusty situation where Dusty goes to Texas Tech, really gets better in college, and then comes back? I don't know, like, his love for the Razorbacks. I know he's playing at Waldron inside the state right now. Could that be a potential in his future that you see down the road?
You know, I could see, you know, a lot of times schools will evaluate and they will miss and it can come back and bite them in the butt. Dusty, I'll be honest with you, I thought Arkansas should have extended an offer to him when he was a senior at Pulaski Academy. I saw him play several times, and he made a huge jump from his junior to senior year as far as his athleticism. I think Peyton, I think he's got better athleticism than most people think he does. I'm not saying that you know, it's good enough for Division One. But again, he can shoot the ball so well. You see guys that are just primarily scorers, and he could definitely do that. And I've seen him go to the basket during spring and summer basketball pretty effectively. So it could be one of those deals where somebody takes a chance and it pays off big time.
Richard Davenport of Whole Hog Sports and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can follow him on Twitter at @ARRecruitingGuy. Richard, appreciate you making time on Thursdays for us, man.
All right, buddy. See you.
Later, man. All right, 877-377-6963. It's the part of the morning where I'm starting to get hungry. And when I think about something good, I think about Sassy's Red House on College and Sassy's Barbecue and Grill up on Weddington. Two great locations in the Northwest Arkansas area. I'm a big fan of the chicken fried steak. Also, their smoked wings, the honey sriracha, are to die for. But anything you get there, you're going to enjoy. The Moo Pig Suey Burger is also fantastic. Burger topped with pulled pork, barbecue sauce, jalapenos, queso, mozzarella cheese, and coleslaw, and all the fixes. Really, anything you're going to get at Sassy's is going to be fantastic. We are not too far out from patio season, folks. They have the best patio in Northwest Arkansas. It's incredible. You sit out there, you have a cold beer, or whatever you feel like drinking that day. Again, Sassy's Barbecue and Grill on Weddington and Sassy's Red House on College. Let's bring back in Clay Henry, publisher of Hogs Illustrated. Clay, I want to touch on you with something that I talked with Richard a little bit about, and that we haven't really spoken to much yet, and that's this Mel Tucker situation. So to reiterate what kind of happened with him, Mel Tucker is now the head coach at Michigan State. He was the head coach at Colorado, was the defensive coordinator at Georgia, is really an up-and-comer. And what happened, from what I understand, is he initially rejected the offer that they sent him at first. Michigan State got desperate and then offered him something he couldn't refuse, like $5-plus million, over $6 million salary pool for assistants. But he initially put out on Twitter, it's like, I'm committed to Colorado and the Buffs. I know that there's a former Dallas Cowboy, and I'm forgetting his name, Clay, but his grandson is being recruited by Mel Tucker, Colorado, and he felt like he lied to his grandson and to his face, so he's up in arms.
It's Drew Pearson, wasn't it?
Drew Pearson, correct. And so he's up in arms about that. As a guy that's done this sport for quite some time, what's your take on this situation, and does this happen more than we think in college football?
Well, it's unfortunate, and but if you put yourself in his shoes and you thought you got their final offer and you turned it down, and you were comfortable that you were the head coach at Colorado and you weren't going to change, and you put it out, and they basically double it. I mean, I don't know what you do. I mean, I don't know if you can go home and tell your wife, it's like, I just turned down $3 million. I'm sorry, but we're staying at Colorado. And, you know,
Better track record, better history. I mean, there's a lot of pros going with Michigan State when you look at Colorado and Michigan State. And better TV deal as well.
Okay, and here's the other part of it that you just talked about. I want you to go look at that footprint of how many pros come out of the state of Colorado, how many football players. You know, Colorado football is there's some sparse, desolate areas in Colorado. I want to tell you, there are no football players on the side of those mountains. There's just none. I've looked, and I have never seen one standing on one of those vertical peaks. And, you know, you've got parts of the state that basically don't even play football. And it's, there are some football players that come out of that state. I'm not going to, you know, and you've got interest in football because you've got an NFL franchise there. But there are more football players closer to East Lansing and more population in general in that Detroit metropolitan area in Chicago, where they're not very far away, that you have to understand that you're in a Big Ten market, you're in a Big Ten type school that has success in football, and Colorado has not.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting place, University of Colorado, and it might not be for everybody. Let's give Mel Tucker a little bit of a benefit of the doubt and what he, you know, what happened to him. And I think he was caught completely by surprise that Michigan State would basically double their offer. And I think he thought he was staying. And I, the one year deal is tough. You know, you're there 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, it's they're basically starting over again. And the fact that it happens after signing day,
it's tough.
Michigan State coach, you know, he resigned on the eve of signing day. That is a strange, bizarre thing. And
pending lawsuit, the bonus that he kicked in.
Everything about what just happened at Michigan State, you know, the resignation and signing, taking the loyalty bonus. Yeah, it's like a loyalty bonus for resigning the day before signing day. That is bizarre. And then what happened with Mel Tucker is equally bizarre.
Bradford,
but from, I guess I understand it a little bit when you talk about the money involved.
Mm-hmm. Bradford from Van Buren text in, Clay says, if we're going to give the players a deadline, then the coaches should have one too. And this is hard. This is a hard discussion.
Makes sense to say that.
Yeah.
Makes sense to say that.
There's almost a double standard when you look at the
transfer portal. Oh, no, it is a double standard. It is.
So on that, Clay, as me as the millennial, you as the guy, the crafty, the wily veteran, is all I like to call you. We tend to side with our own kin, basically. Like, you would tend to side more with the coaches. I would tend to side more with the players because I'm in contact more with them. You've talked with coaches and stuff like that. Is that a fair comparison when you look at the transfer portal and people complaining about the players, but there doesn't seem to be as much backlash when the coaches just up and leave?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much money involved with the school, and they've invested so much that in when you sign that letter, it says you are not signing with the coach, you are signing with the school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over and over. I mean, it's there. And, you know, but I will say this, every time this happens, we're closer and closer to having, free transfers in the NCAA. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, Congress is going to say enough of this, and we're going to
Congress,
you know. Yeah, what I'm saying is there'll be legislation to say this is what you're going to do. I mean, what do you think happens with it's state legislatures where it starts. Yeah, I mean, it started in California, right, with the, you own your likeness and you can sell it. So maybe something with the transfer rule happens the same way. They lose their antitrust, basically.
That's something to think about.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
So, Clay, it's time to deliver, man. You've been hyping up this advice. You talked to me a little about it. So let's. I'll let you have the floor. What you got for us?
Yeah, and despite following the tractor commercial, it is not buy a new tractor because she thinks my tractor's sexy. That's not the advice I was going to give. But you might try that. In some places that might work. But here's my advice to the guys out there, and it will require, you like to say, you and Phil like to give out homework, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is homework, and this will require effort on your part, but the return is worth it. And, it's write a poem to your lovely. And I mean, it works, and it is something that is worth the time to invest. Does not have to be a long poem, but tell her why she's special in a poem. And it doesn't have to rhyme. Everybody thinks poetry has to rhyme. It does not. And if you can make a little bit of it rhyme, that's okay. But I learned that, you learn what your parents model, right? My dad wrote poetry and mailed it to my daughters, to my mom. He on their birthday, my daughters would often get a poem from their grandpa. And then you just saw the way they lit up. It's like, okay, I You know, I can write a poem to Gene Ann and then read it to them. Read it to them. And if you want to see them go misty on you, you read a poem to your wife, it will, or your girlfriend, they will like it. And it's okay. That's my advice. And I've heard back through the years, people have done that and has not failed one time, you know, and it's, a little bit of effort, a little bit of homework goes a long way. Preparation, guys. So you can do it.
Clay, have you written yours yet? Is it something you're going to do later on today?
No, I haven't written it yet. It will be. So I'm actually going to be gone on Valentine's this year. I will be covering the baseball game tomorrow. I'm driving over to from Norfolk where I live. I'll be back Saturday. Be back late Friday night. But we've decided Valentine's celebration. We've got dinner reservations, and our dinner will be Saturday night, so I'll read the poem at dinner Saturday night. So I've got a little bit of time yet left, but I think I know what I'm going to say, and it's fun to write it, and it's even more fun to read it to your wife. 41 years, I don't know whether she expects it every time. There have been a few times she thought maybe I forgot because I didn't have anything with me, and I pulled something out of my jacket or whatever, and it works every time.
So 41 years, Clay. If you're 65, you got married when you're 24, 23. Am I right in that math?
Yep, 1978, okay. December of 1978.
Can you? I know some people I talk to, they can remember everything that happened that day. They can go back. Do you remember? Do you remember that day at all? Do you remember that wedding, or is it kind of passed?
The wedding?
Yeah, by time and everything.
Oh, I can remember. Now, here's the thing that probably disappoints Jean Ann. She says there were three solos sang at the wedding. I think three is the right number. So I'd probably get in trouble if it was two. And she was like, what were the names of the songs? I got no clue. And I sit there and I'm standing up there. One of them, I think, was sung before she came down the aisle, and then two more maybe while we were standing beside each other before the pastor started. But, yeah, I remember a lot of the details. Now, I will say this. It was a long day. The groomsman in the wedding got me up at 4:30, and we went duck hunting that morning. Of course, you know, we got married in DeWitt, and that's
as good a duck hunting in the morning of your
everybody
wedding.
In the wedding party. Oh yes, we went hunting, and so that made for a long day after a long night, right? Now, I will say a long night, you know, the rehearsal dinner was in Stuttgart at the Red Door, I think, it doesn't exist anymore. But we were asleep by 10 o'clock because we knew we were getting up early the next morning. So I shouldn't say a long night, but it was an interesting night. Let's just put it that way.
Clay, do you guys watch a movie after the dinner? Do you guys have a special ritual? I mean, you mentioned the poem, obviously, but do you guys have a special ritual outside of just...
Nah, I don't think so. I don't remember that. You know, I might be watching Family Feud. Who knows? or American Pickers, reruns of American Pickers. We like that. And we watched some reruns last night of Better Call Saul. We might, the new episode comes out February 23rd. And we're just trying to make sure we're prepared for that. It's been about 18 months since the last episode, so we're watching the very last of season 4 just to make sure. So we also like to watch the reruns of Cheers. All of those things are, you know, but as far as a Valentine's, you know, something on the Hallmark Channel, now we don't do that.
Just got a text in from buddy Jeff Taylor over at Jeff's Clubhouse. He told me, Clay, that he's did 18 holes of golf on his wedding day. So I guess I just thought, again, I haven't been married before. I don't know all the details and stuff that goes on, but I just thought the wedding day was like, you didn't do jack. But based on his response, based on your response, I guess I'm wrong about that.
Well, you got your buddies with you. I mean, you know, the groomsmen, I mean, it's only natural that, y'all aren't just going to sit around.
Yeah.
How long does it take a guy to get his tux on and be standing there? I mean, it doesn't take, there's nothing, there's no preparation. You know, it's like, hey, it, I mean, anymore, guys don't even have to shave. You know, it's like that. You know, having a little fuzz there almost is standard way to go for. But yeah, we got up early, and I mean, it's, you know, we were done duck hunting by 9 o'clock, and the wedding was that afternoon. So yeah, there was a lot to, now all day of golf, that might be a different deal. So, but yeah, for, it seems like it was a 4 o'clock wedding or some time like that, but there was a lot of time between when the duck hunting ended and Jean Ann didn't think anything about it. She knew, all of us were going to go duck hunting. It's just, we're down. The wedding was during duck season. You're going to go duck hunting.
So, Clay, you've spoke to the married couples, the ones with girlfriends, boyfriends, whoever's listening to our program. What about the singles, man? What are the singles supposed to do today? I know my plan. So we get off here at 1:30 tomorrow early because of the baseball game that'll interrupt halftime. So I'll get off and I'll go work out and fiddle around, do some other stuff, hang out with some buddies that are in town. But speaking to the single guy or the single girl, what's your advice to them on what they should do on this love day, Clay?
Well, if they don't have one, you know, the best place to find your mate is in church. So that'd be my advice. And might not be what you want to hear, but I think it's a pretty tried and true method of finding your mate. So, you know, it's probably not where you're going to go tomorrow night after the baseball game. But anyway, you at some point, that's where I would hunt for my mate. You know, the other thing you can do is just continue to find people that, you know, that you can model after. And I'm not saying that you need to model me or Phil or Tommy. Maybe there's somebody out there that you can watch how they handle themselves and model after them.
So, Clay, I don't know if I've told you my timeline yet. And again, God never, he throws our timelines out the window. My grandmother's told me the exact same thing. You need to find your future wife in church. So that's not the only time I've heard that advice. My timeline, hopefully, if it falls through, is my dad got married when he was 29. I think in my situation, I want to screw around for next couple, and that's probably not the best use of word. That's not what I intended. I meant I want to have fun and just kind of relax.
I got it.
You can
okay.
laugh at that, Clay. But that's not what I was initially intended when I said that. I just want to be able to be single and do whatever the next couple of years, not have to worry about anything. It's nice to be able to go up on trips or not have to worry about anyone else in your life outside.
Not ready for commitment. That's all I have to say.
So,
I'm not ready for commitment yet.
I think my dad timed it out great. He was 29 years old when he got married, and I think that would be a good 29 or 30. I think that's a form in my life because I think, and I always joke with Tommy about this, me being half lineal. Like, my hair's long, but I get up early in the morning. I don't drink during the week, but I drink more than I probably should on the weekends. Like, I do stuff that, like, I probably need to mature in certain aspects, but, like, I'm halfway there in others. So maybe by the time I get to 29 or 30, Clay, I'll be all the way there. But, again, that's 5 or so years. So we got a long way to go in that category.
We do have a long way to go. We're taking it one day at a time, right, Ty?
Exactly right. Exactly right. This has been a Recruiting Thursday, and it's brought to you by Breen RV. They're giving away $25,000 right now. $1,000 to the first 25 sold customers from February 10th through the 29th. Come see the area's best selection of motorhomes, fifth wheels, and travel trailers, and get RV show pricing plus free maintenance for life. Breen RV needs your trade, and top dollar is paid for it. Breen can sell it on consignment, too. The best campers and free maintenance for life. Only at 5603 Alma Highway in Van Buren. That's Breen RV, where adventures begin. Clay, thanks for doing this.
Okay,
the last two
I'll finish you with a poem.
Okay, go ahead.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Ty still got a chance. How about you?
I'd say that's pretty fair. JT and oh my gosh. JT and Hot Springs, Clay, I guess to go off what my grandmother said, what you said. He said he met his first wife at church, and that ended in a divorce. Hopefully that will not happen for me. B in Clarksville said, I got married at 18. My son was married at 25. Don't put an unnecessary stress on yourself.
Oh, you still got a chance?
Yeah.
Yep. Take your time.
It's like, is it Lloyd and Harry that's Dumb and Dumber? Is that it's been so long since I've seen that movie. Lloyd and Harry, is that right? Okay, you remember? It's like, so
I don't remember.
You haven't seen that? Okay, what's
well,
like
I have seen it, but I don't remember the names.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, so you think there's a chance. So
there is a chance.
We've got opening day tomorrow again. Baseball starts at 1:30 pregame here on ESPN Arkansas. Phil Elson will have the call for you starting then, and then we'll have the game starting at 2. We're gonna, Claire. Are you hopping on with us tomorrow? Or are you pretty tapped
out? I'll be there.
Okay.
No, I'll be there. If y'all, you know, I think I'll be at the ballpark. You're there too, right?
Yeah. So I won't be there tomorrow, but I'll be there on Saturday.
Okay.
So.
I'll see Phil at the ball game then Friday.
Perfect. Yep. I think. Okay. I think tomorrow, Clay, and we got about 10 seconds. I think you and me and Tommy are gonna talk about a little walk-up songs tomorrow. Be ready for that. You ready
All
for
right.
that?
Yeah, I'll be ready.
All right. For Clay Henry, I'm Ty Richardson. Don't spend life sitting on your hands. Morning Rush tomorrow.
Number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.